Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I'm your host, and joining me is the amazing
Gregory Webster.
Hello, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
I feel like you just, like, I've been doing all these, you know, intros to you, and you just need something like Spider-Man, just the amazing Greg Webster. It seems perfect.
I mean, what about the friendly neighborhood Greg Webster?
Okay, sure.
I'd be down with that.
Okay.
I feel much more friendly neighborhood.
Fair enough. So, any news or interesting tidbits you want to discuss before we jump in?
You know, the only news I can think of is that it's very possible we're about to get a bunch of early leaks. I don't know if you heard about this, but someone on eBay had a bunch of pre-released, well, unreleased Marvel Champion and Marvel Crisis Protocol models for sale.
I guess, wow.
Decks. Yeah, and so this seller basically had a bunch of products up, and his Marvel Champion decks are not even released. Like, they haven't even announced them at Fantasy Flight right now. So this seller
are these selling for like crazy money, or did they get taken down?
He put them up at MSRP and on Buy It Now.
Oh my God.
Someone is about to get Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight. And so that's the one person that's in the Discord group. And, he's even openly talking about it. He's like, he's saying he's not sure he's gonna like share what's the cards with people because he feels guilty about the fact that these are like March releases. But yeah, like, so it's very strange. Like, Fantasy Flight Games hasn't announced the decks that this guy is selling. And he's selling the mats. He's selling Thor and Loki, and, he's got Proxima Midnight and Corvus Glaive. And apparently he sold more than one, and he's got some of the mats, and people thought he was like a pre-selling or like a scammer, but apparently there are people who have gotten photos of him, like, you know, holding the products and doing, you know, it's legit, apparently. No one's really sure how he has them, and I'm sure it's not legitimate, right? Like, maybe he got them from someone who received them legitimately, but yeah, this guy didn't realize what he had. He sold them for the MSRP for
yeah, I
Buy
mean,
It Now.
It'd be really interesting to see if he had done an auction format to see what it would have got.
Yeah. So one of them, so he realized his mistake, and he changed, this is a spoiler maybe for Marvel Champions, but one of the unreleased decks he had for Marvel Champions was Black Widow. Fantasy Flight Games has not even really announced that this will be out, but he has it in hand. So he switched it to an auction, and it's a, you know, the Marvel Champion decks are like less than $20.
Right, yeah.
It sold for $250.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
So over 10 times what it should cost. But it's to get it 3 months early, right?
Right.
So there's a chance that we're going to be seeing a lot of models that we, like, way early, right? AMG's been doing a pretty good job of, you know, teasing stuff right before
right.
it comes out. And, like, the hobby painters that have YouTube channels and the employees paint their stuff and show it off. You know, a couple weeks ago, like, I think Dallas just painted all his Wakandans and his Venom, and those come out in a week, or they come out in 2 weeks. So it's a very strange situation where we might
next
be getting
week,
spoilers.
At this point.
Oh, yeah, it is next week. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
by the time
everybody listens,
yeah.
it's out.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other announcement was they did talk about how the Infinity Gems are going to be coming into the game,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool. I don't believe we'll see any of them yet, but they basically did announce that the Infinity Gems will be characters will have a superpower that allows them to take Infinity Gems, and then the Infinity Gems will cost threat points, basically, to give them an additional superpower.
They're going to be spread out versus through several boxes, I believe. Is that correct? Because doesn't Star-Lord come with one?
Yeah, so we do know, we know that Star-Lord comes with the Power Gem. We know Loki comes with the Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight come with the Time Gem. And then Thor and Loki come with one as well, but no, it's not Thor and Loki, is it? No, it is. It's Thor and Loki, right? Loki and Hela come with the gem.
Thor
as
and
well.
Valkyrie.
Yes, thank you. So Thor and Valkyrie do not have one. They have a crisis card. Loki and Hela come with a gem as well. So there are three characters coming with gems. They talked more about how Thanos will be able to use the gems, but other characters will be limited to what gems they will have. I actually reached out and I got them to confirm that Thanos comes with all six gems, so you don't need to buy six products before Thanos to get to lock in it. So it's going to be really interesting to see who can take what gems and what their powers are. And they did say that it's leading up to Thanos, so I think that might mean we're going to see all the Infinity Gems released before Thanos comes out, which definitely makes me think he's not coming out in March, like was originally kind of suggested.
Right. Well, that's some interesting news, interesting info.
Yeah, just all sorts of interesting things. We'll see where it goes.
I have to give you a little personal update.
What's happened?
So, I think in the last podcast, I said that Brian and his 19-year-old black cat were having a battle of wills. And he purchased this super expensive, like, automated self-cleaning litter box, and she doesn't want to do it. And so he's like, fine, I'll show you. And, like, we had it set up, and then we had, like, the way they recommend you do it to get them acclimated to it is you move some of their litter into the new box, and you leave the old boxes there, and you just don't clean them. And, like, Lucy was refusing to use the new box, and so Brian was like, well, fine, I'll show you. And he took away her preferred cat box. And so Lucy was like, well, fine, I'll show you. And so now she's crapping in the shower. So I feel like I'm in your shoes having to try to potty train a child, except mine's this belligerent elderly cat as opposed to a toddler. So
it's pretty great. I hope it goes well, because getting pets used to change is never easy.
That's true, especially one as set in her ways as this one. But let's go ahead and move on, and we can start talking about Dr. Octopus.
Yeah.
Or Otto Octavius. So, do you want to start off by reading his card to us?
Yeah, sure. Otto Octavius is he's a threat 3 character. He has 5 stamina. He's a medium move. He's size 2, so normal human size, even with the tentacles. I think this is important to point out because he's on a 50 millimeter base, even though he's only a size 2.
Right.
I think that's to represent that his tentacles cause him to take up more space. It also does make him move faster than other characters that are move medium. So that's pretty nice. He's got pretty good defenses. He's physical defense 4, energy defense 3, and then mystical defense 4 for some reason. He has a very special strike, unlike a lot of other characters. His strike is range 3, where almost everybody else's, their strike is range 2. It's 4 dice, costs 0 power. And after it's resolved, just like every other strike, for every damage, he gets that much power. It has the special ability, Flurry of Arms. So whenever he's making it, every single wild counts as two successes, not just one. This is one of the abilities where rolling multiple wilds gets you multiple bonuses. So that's really powerful. He has a second attack called Arm Lasers, which is an energy attack. It's range 4. It's 6 dice, and it has a cost of 3. Arm Lasers is pretty cool because it's on his tentacles. It ignores line of sight and cover. You don't get cover from it because his tentacles are going around corners. And then it has Pierce. If you roll a wild, you get to change one of the defending character's successes into a blank, basically. So it's a little bit more accurate, and it ignores, you know, a lot of the defensive bonuses. It's pretty cool. He has a superpower called Ox Clutches, which is a 3-cost throw, basically. So he can throw a size 2 or less within range 3, and he can throw it short. It's not as good as some other characters' throws. He can grab things that are 3 away, which is nice, but he can only throw it short, and he can only throw something of size 2. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. He can do it to a terrain feature or an enemy character.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as long range, or you can't throw big things, but you can throw most characters, which is a bonus on a lot of the throws. He has a really cool just passive ability that he always has called Scientific Hubris. Whenever he rolls dice, after it's resolved, he gains 1 power if he rolled at least 1 critical. So this is after everything else is done. So if for example, someone pierces your defense and changes your critical into a miss, you're going to not gain it because it is after everything is resolved. And then he also has Wall Crawler, which is same as Spider-Man. It is whenever he's moving, he counts as a size 5 character. So he will not have any difficulty. He will never need to climb because he can always just move over terrain. So what are your thoughts? Oh, I'm sorry. There is one change. When he's injured, he goes up to 6 stamina.
Right, yeah.
He doesn't give up very easy.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on Doc Ock, Jay?
This is a side note that isn't really related to the gameplay stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't like his art or his studio scheme.
Is it the yellow and the green?
I think maybe, yeah. Also, I don't know, like I thought that he was really cool in the comic book arc that we read mm-hmm. today. But I think probably it is kind of the yellow and green.
Yeah, they went with his like really classic old 90s cartoon comic book scheme. I think he's a lot buffer than I remember him, but
he's kind of got a pot belly, and I think part of what sticks out with it as well is that it feels like if you compare how he looks or his art or whatever to the rest of the art in the game, he just kind of sticks out to me a little bit.
I don't know what you mean. Like he looks weird, or
like I don't know. Like most of the art, most of the sculpts, I think look pretty cool, and mm-hmm. he is decidedly not cool.
Okay. I don't know.
Obviously, this is very, very subjective. So
I kind of like it. I like how he's just crossing his arms, like he's confident in his own success.
Yeah, yeah.
And he lets the tentacles do the work. I think it's.
I like Doc Ock as a character quite a bit.
Okay.
What that's worth. And I honestly think that I would probably like his sculpt or his art a lot more if it was like black with gray or silver accents or something like that. So I probably should have just had my painter not do the studio scheme on him, and I'd probably be happier with him.
Okay.
My other thought with him is that, you know, I've had kind of a hard time getting excited about Doc Ock. But I think that I've tried to analyze why that is. And I think there's maybe a few things going on. The first one is that, first off, I think that I've been kind of comparing him in some ways versus some of the other 4-cost characters instead of 3-cost. Mm. And if you compare him to the other 3-costs, so right now we have Iron Man, Baron Zemo, and Crossbones. Those are still really cool, really good characters. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that he's a good character as well. It's just, I think that it's pretty interesting that, so there's, for right now, at least, there's, it seems like there's more 4-point characters than 3 points. Within that small subset of 3-point characters, there's just some really good options. And I don't think that he's a bad option by any means. Last week we did Captain Marvel, and especially when like Vision comes out, I think that she's gonna look not too great compared to Vision. But I think that even though I'm not sure that I like Doc Ock as much as some of the other 3-point characters, I don't think that he compares as unfavorably as like say Captain Marvel versus some of the others. So I don't know. What do you think on that topic?
You know, I've been comparing him to 4-cost characters too, but in my mind, I look at him as more of a budget version of a 4-cost character.
Yeah.
Because he's got a throw, he's got decent range, and he's got a decent amount of... He's actually a lot faster than you might think, I've noticed. Like, he gets around pretty easily with movement, his large base, and wall crawler. Ox Clutches is really good. He almost feels like a 3-point version of Spider-Man sometimes.
Right, yeah.
Except he's a little bit better at attacking than Spider-Man is.
Yeah.
Or he feels like a little, you know, with the throws, and with the nice mix of like a strong ranged 4 energy attack and a decent ranged strike attack. Almost like an Ultron. So I'm thinking of him as like, well, if you want one of those characters, but you only have 3 points, you can bring Doc Ock instead, because you're getting like a good amount of utility. He's pretty fast. He's pretty defensive. He doesn't have any big weaknesses. And I feel like when you just look at him on paper, he's not very impressive, right? He doesn't have any cool tricks. Like Crossbones does for being like really survivable and way faster. He's not going to be able to hold one objective by himself like Iron Man. He's not going to be able to like zoom across the board like Zemo. And so he doesn't look as dynamic. But I really like how a lot of his abilities are based off of rolling random dice. Like whenever he gets a crit and gets power, I've been noticing he powers up a lot faster than you would expect because he can gain power from attacking and defending. I've noticed that like when you get 2 wilds on a strike with Flurry of Arms, it's exploding. It's fantastic. So my thoughts on him are that when I look at him and compare him to other characters right now, I often want what one of the other 3 cost 3s have, but at the same time, when I'm playing him, I always feel like he does a lot of work. Like I've really enjoyed, you know, those turns where he gets a lucky strike, or when arm lasers pierces and gets exactly what I need to knock someone down or get rid of an opponent. And I really do feel like his defensive abilities are quite nice, and he can be a big base hiding behind, you know, a size 3. That's really nice. The biggest disadvantage I'm noticing for Dr. Octopus is that he is not in any affiliation. So
yeah, that's one of the things I was going to talk about too, is that it does make it difficult when you're making your roster that he's not currently in an affiliation. I'm assuming that at some point he will be in something, but it does make it difficult.
Yeah, the more characters we get and the more we kind of diversify it, the more I'm feeling like Spider-Man and Dr. Octopus they're hurting, because if I bring them, a lot of times it's counting against the team affiliation I'm trying to get.
Right.
And then I have to start comparing them to like, well, maybe my roster of 10 can have a different, like being a 4 and a 3, there's lots of interesting choices I can take that are in Wakanda, Avengers, or Cabal. So the question is, who can I take that's an Avenger that costs three? Which would be Iron Man, or do right. I take Crossbones or Zemo to be in Cabal, or do I take Shuri because I want to be in Wakanda? And like, I feel like one of the disadvantages that affiliation means I might drop Dr. Octopus from my roster of 10 just because it makes list building a little bit
right.
harder.
Right.
So that's the struggle I've been having with him is I'm trying to think like, what are my 10 going to be and how am I going to list build? I do have a little like a funny anecdote that I've been trying to play with my 10 and stick to it. Like I was at a tournament.
Right. Yeah.
We ended up doing a 20 threat crisis and I realized I didn't have enough Avengers in my 10 to make it over 50% of my list mm-hmm. and get the Avenger affiliation because I only had three Avengers and I had to build a 6-person list.
Right.
And I couldn't make the numbers work perfectly. So I ended up just taking a Cabal list instead. But I just realized like, oh yeah, if you only have four, you need a high cost character that's not in your affiliation in order to make it work. Like for example, the Wakandans are 13 points, all four of them. So if you try to have a 6-person Wakandan team, you will need to take all four of them, and then you'll have 7 points with the two other characters if you're trying to get a 6-person team. I don't know how relevant that will always be, especially
right.
if people bring Hulk or MODOK.
Right.
But that'll actually be an advantage to running to trying that out, right? Is if you have a high cost, you can do a 5-person instead of a 6-person.
Right. One of the things that I've noticed when I've been playing Doc Ock, and it's probably, like, I understand why they did it with the balance reasons that they're doing, but there've been multiple times where I've been, like, going to do my strike attack, and, like, I understand that it's range 3, I understand it has flurry of arms so that wilds count as double, and I understand that he gets, you know, power from scientific hubris, but like, it just has this little twinge that bothers me that it's a 4-dice free attack instead of a 5-dice, because that's what I've kind of gotten used to in a lot of the characters, is their base attack is 5-dice for their best free one. There's a few that are, that it's not. Black Widow's strike is 4, and
Ultron as well, but his strike doesn't generate power.
Yeah,
you want to use
really
energy blast.
Yeah. And Iron Man, his repulsor blast is 4, but it's range 4 instead of range 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that is basically it.
That's a good point. That is a little odd, I guess. The 1-in-8 chance of getting Flurry of Arms was expected to make it worth more than a 5.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I could see that if you had on a 3-point character, if it was a 5-die strike and you had Flurry of Arms and scientific hubris, that would likely be too good. But it just like I said, it just causes kind of this little twinge that I feel whenever I go to do that attack. Mm-hmm. I'm curious on something with you. So maybe we'll get into this specifically on what scenarios you specifically like him with, but I think one of the things that why I might have an issue with him as well is that it feels to me like the game obviously has two halves with its scenarios. It has the secure portion and the extract portion. And on the secure, you want someone who's pretty survivable, who can go up there and stand there and take a licking and keep on ticking. And with the extract stuff, you usually want someone who's has pretty good movement. And with Doc Ock being a wall crawler and being, you know, a 50mm base on a medium movement, that is decent movement, and like you said, his defensive stats are pretty solid, but kind of my issue is that he's not as fast as the fastest characters, and he's not as survivable as the truly survivable characters. And maybe, you know, the answer is that he's 3 points and he's kind of good at both. But that's one of the things that I think I've struggled a little bit with him as well, is what's kind of been your experience on that?
I think I value him in scenarios that are more spread out. So I really liked him in the Infinity formula, secure, so that he can kind of sit back or move up, and then sit there and generate power and then hold a point by himself. Because I feel like as a 3-pointer, he's not amazingly resilient, but giving him all that extra power and just letting him double arm laser if somebody comes up is very potent. And then because it's more spread out and I don't need him to be moving, I need him to be securing, he could also move up and maybe grab an extraction or challenge an extraction, point, and then move back on to the secure. And the fact that there's four in a rectangle gives me a lot of choices about, you know, keeping Doc Ock on one flank. And then maybe he probably can't do it by himself, but I feel like him and another character could easily hold a side. I don't like him in Gamma Wave, just because I feel like characters ganging up against him will easily, like, handle him. He doesn't have any real his defense dice are good, but he doesn't have any larger strength. Similar to that, I like Spider Infected with him, because I like Spider Infected with lower cost characters, because you can only hold one Spider Infected at a time. The person with more characters has a clear advantage, because it's going to be easier for them to pick up more Spider Infected.
I need to force myself to play that one a little bit more, but it's definitely a scenario that I am not the biggest fan of.
I love it, actually.
I know you do.
I really like it. And the more I force people to play it with me, because that is what I have to do, but the more I make people play it with me, the more you realize that it's really interesting, because it forces you to make these hard decisions about moving or attacking, about trying to knock out your opponents and stop them from scoring, or try to score yourself. And it actually causes you to score more frequent. Like, it causes the score to go up more, because you have less characters. You have less characters stopping your opponents from contesting and scoring. So similar to that, I like him with Cosmic Cube, because he generates power that way. I don't like him with any of the ones where there's like central locations.
Yeah.
So that's about half of them.
Yeah.
But if they're spread out and he can focus on one character at a time, I think he's really happy and he's really strong then.
Yeah. I mean, we can go ahead and continue the discussion on that, in our bonus episode. I think, but we're to the point now where we probably ought to start talking about our comic book club.
Yeah.
So which arc did we end up going with this time, Greg?
So, we went out to the community, and we got a couple good recommendations. One of them I really wanted to do, it's called Superior Spider-Man. Jay, are you at all familiar with Superior Spider-Man?
I think I might recognize that costume if I saw it, but okay.
So
that's about it.
Superior Spider-Man is basically the storyline where Dr. Octopus takes over Spider-Man's body, and Peter Parker dies, and Otto Octavius is Spider-Man. And obviously that wouldn't really mesh well with the game, because we're not talking about Spider-Man, even if it's Otto Octavius inside his body. But Superior Spider-Man was a big favorite with people. But what we ended up going with was Ends of the Earth, which is actually like a couple stories before Superior Spider-Man starts. So it's in the Amazing Spider-Man comics, and it's issues 682 to 687.
Okay. So why don't you go ahead and give us a... Why don't we give some info about Doc Ock's origin and background, and then we'll talk a little bit about this story arc in particular.
Yeah. So Dr. Octopus's big background is that he is a genius level scientist. He's an amazing, he did a lot of work with nuclear reactors, and he was an award-winning scientist, and he was extremely successful. And he, in order to like manipulate radioactive materials, he invented these arms that were controlled by a harness. And they would, you know, like the arms would go into the radioactive area and he could do things, and then he could, you know, take the harness off and he could come back to the arms later. And so there was an accident that basically fused the harness to his body. And it's kind of changed, like, the explanation for it. Sometimes the, like, radiation mutated his brain to allow him to control the tentacles mentally. In some stories I've read, it's been, like, a feature that he added to the tentacles because they're fused to his body, so he might as well control them mentally. And I think I saw one where it said it was actually his mutant ability that allowed him to do it. So there have been a couple, like, excuses for how he can do it, but this accident left him connected to the tentacles, and he couldn't separate from them. And this kind of led him to madness. And again, right, there's questions, was it radiation poisoning that made him evil and made him into a supervillain? In the video game, he has, like, a degenerative illness, and he's losing control of his body, which I thought was really cool. So the, like, octopus arms are how he controls, how he can do things. But his main deal has been he's a genius scientist, but he's also very evil, and he's kind of a classic mad scientist character, where he cares more about his scientific goals or his hubris than he cares about anything else. And because Spider-Man beats him a lot, he ends up being a Spider-Man villain.
Okay. Yeah. So do we want to dive in some more on this arc in particular?
Yeah. The general story arc of this is pretty cool. It's we see a Dr. Octopus that's like really different. He is dying basically from all the injuries he's received being a supervillain. Because he's just a normal human body with, you know, these amazing tentacles, and he's constantly getting beat up by superheroes. So at the beginning of the story, he is dying. He has created a life support harness that he has to stay in. So he's basically in this, like, metal coffin with the octopus arms coming out the back. And he shoots a bunch of satellites into space, and he... announces
stealth technology.
Yes, there is stealth technology. But he announces that he turns up the temperature of the whole planet to show everybody what global warming is going to be like in the future. And then he announces to the whole world that he's launching these satellites and he's going to save the world before he dies. And that, you know, all the world needs to do is allow him to save them. And Spider-Man and the Avengers, go to stop him. And they are defeated by Dr. Octopus and his team, the Sinister Six. The Sinister Six is a classic Spider-Man villain team. Dr. Octopus was the first one to, like, start them. The Sinister Six changes all the time. This team is made up of Dr. Octopus, Electro, Rhino, Sandman, Chameleon, and Mysterio. And so they basically, through Dr. Octopus's genius plans, they manage to defeat all the Avengers, and basically, like, capture them. It's revealed that Silver Sable was watching, and she saves Black Widow and Spider-Man, and they basically begin this mission to, like, blow up and all of the, like, factories and stop Dr. Octopus from sending his satellites into space. And, like, as the story goes on, they like pick it apart and they're traveling around the world. It has a very, like, action movie vibe where they have to keep going to different settings and fighting different battles. But it's really interesting because the whole world decides, oh yeah, we do want Dr. Octopus to stop global warming. And Spider-Man, you know, Spider-Man's trying to convince them not to the whole time, but it eventually becomes the world versus Spider-Man and his friends. And so realizing that, you know, everybody's turning against him, Spider-Man puts out a message asking all the world's heroes to help. And three people step up to help. So they're attacking these facilities, and they, you know, it kind of goes from one thing to another, but they end up in Dr. Octopus's secret ocean base, and the final battle is basically Dr. Octopus reveals that, yeah, he wasn't going to stop global warming. He was actually going to raise the temperature to kill most of mankind. But he predicted that 0.008% of the humans would live, and those people would revere him as the world's greatest mass murderer. Dr. Octopus is defeated, and Spider-Man, of course, is unhappy because nothing in Spider-Man's life can go perfectly. But so in the battle, he basically had to let Silver Sable die and leave her because he had to stop Dr. Octopus. So it was this big, you know, Dr. Octopus's last evil plan, and it ended up, you know, killing one of the classic, like, 90s Spider-Man frenemies, because she was, like, constantly against Spider-Man back then. But so what did you think of it?
So overall, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Like I said, I liked a lot how Doc Ock looked in it. I also enjoyed kind of how he was portrayed. I liked the part where, the Avengers basically decided, okay, we're going to go stop the Sinister Six, and then they get their butt kicked.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I thought there were quite a few parts of the, comic book arc that I was a fan of. What about you?
I liked it a lot. I felt like there were parts of it that felt like it was really rushed. Like that last issue felt like a lot of different things happened in it. And I feel like it could have handled some of the, like, characterizations a little bit better. Like for example, at one point Black Widow talks about her homeland. And I'm like, Black Widow betrayed Russia. Like, she doesn't really view herself as a Russian anymore. But, you know, that's something that happens with comics, right? Characters get, you know, characterized in ways that you might not agree with. But I really did enjoy the Spider-Man. I didn't mention this, but there was a subplot about Spider-Man's, like, laboratory friends, mm-hmm. and how Spider-Man had been making all these devices secretly to fight the Sinister Six so that he would have an easier time. And I really enjoyed seeing all the little Peter Parker inventions that he made to stop these villains. And I think they were a really cool addition. And it kind of, the science-y side of Spider-Man has always been one of my favorite things. So seeing him, like, bust these out, and how Dr. Octopus had, like, turned a bunch of his inventions against him.
There was also, it almost felt like several points in the comic book where it felt like it was the Man in Black and the Sicilian in The Princess Bride trying to decide, like, how well they know their adversary and how many layers of thinking that person's doing. And, you know, Doc Ock would be like, oh, well, I knew that you were going to do this, and so I did this, and then, you know, Spider-Man's like, oh, well, of course I knew that you knew I was going to do this, and so I did this, and I didn't think that they got too carried away with it, and so I thought that that was kind of cool as well.
Mm-hmm. I also liked how it shows how deep a, like, background the two characters have, where Dr. Octopus is like, I'm going to cure global warming. And Spider-Man's just like, no, he's not. He's going to kill us all. He's going to kill us all. We need to stop him. And throughout the series, all the way until the last issue, there's, like, people like, are you sure you want us to stop Dr. Octopus? He's like, yes, we have to do this. No, we cannot trust him. And I really did like that, because it was just, You know, and it didn't, like, to us, the reader as well, you're kind of like, maybe he is trying to solve global warming. I really did question if, like, it would get to the end and it would just have Dr. Octopus, like, crying and being like, I just want to help people. But instead you get there and he's like, yeah, I'm going to kill everybody. I thought it was really fun. It was a very, like, over-the-top comic booky story, but it did a good job of showing the two characters' relationship.
Yeah. So why would you say that we ended up picking the story arc?
I think part of it is just that it was a good representation of the Sinister Six, because I think that's a key part of his character, is that he's the kind of villain that always wants to, like, get a team to do his bidding. And in a lot of the, you know, in a lot of the versions of Dr. Octopus, he is the leader of the Sinister Six, and he is, you know, commanding other villains. So it was good to see him doing that. And then it's a really nice modern version of Dr. Octopus that is a little bit different, but still obviously Dr. Octopus. Also, I think it's a solid story.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, well, we can go ahead and wrap it up with this last question. Do you have any comments on the creative team behind this arc?
I'm going to have to check exactly who wrote this. Yeah, it was Dan Slott. Dan Slott's a good writer. Dan Slott has been writing Spider-Man for a while. He's kind of one of those, like, he's been around Marvel and he's written everyone at this point. So I believe he kept writing the Dr. Octopus Spider-Man, and, like, he's just been writing Spider-Man for the last 10 years or so. No, that's not right. Not 10 years. But he's been doing a lot of different Marvel comics, and he's been around with Marvel. Like, that's probably his big... Oh, no, he did. He's been writing Spider-Man since 2008, and he stopped in 2018. Wow.
That's a pretty good run.
My God. Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
I've always been kind of curious what sort of, like, how well the creative teams behind the comic book stories get compensated. But that's just a weird random thought.
From what I can tell, it's they get pretty fairly compensated for being, like compared to TV writers, they get fairly compensated. The downside being that usually they don't own any of their creations.
Right, yeah.
And that's a lot of times where there's drama in comic book world. You know, like, I mean, Stan Lee, for all we love Stan Lee, and he's been this, like, icon of Marvel Comics, he was suing Marvel for a long time. And I mean, I think part of his deal was that he got to be a producer on every single thing that he right. could possibly be. And I think that's how Marvel kind of paid him back and settled it with him, was that they gave him jobs for life. So, but, you know, I think most comic book creators, like, they have to keep on doing it no matter how successful their stories are.
Right.
And I know there've been like deals that rip off creators that tried to get, like, a good contract. So I think you just have to, it's one of those jobs where you just have to keep on doing it.
So this is where we would normally say what our next comic book arc is, but I don't know that we've decided that, have we?
I assumed we were doing Venom or Black Panther next, and I am ready to roll with whichever one you want to go with.
Oh, well, let's do Black Panther.
Okay.
I'll actually have had some play experience with him. So what's going to be our Black Panther arc?
Okay, so I just want to warn everybody before they read this. It's the beginning of an arc. It is not the complete story arc, but it is called Black Panther, A Nation Under Our Feet. And it's going to be Black Panther by... Oh dear! Can you help me pronounce this? Kote?
Ta-Nehisi
Coates. I'm sorry. It's one of those names I've never heard out loud until said it to me once. So Ta-Nehisi Coates. It is Black Panther issues 1 through 6 from the 2016 Black Panther. It's important you get the year right, because otherwise you're going to get some very different Black Panther comics. But it's the beginning of his run on Black Panther, and if you know anything about him, he is a very well-known and influential writer in modern culture. So we're going to be reading Black Panther 2016 issues 1 through 6.
Yeah, he's someone who will, I think it's very interesting that, you know, he's writing comics for the Black Panther at the same time that he's basically writing political pieces for The Atlantic that are like having a big influence on the political discourse of the country. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, it's I've read it before, and it's one of those series that hopefully our listeners will get into it and they'll read all the way through his arc that he did. I believe he did an arc that was about 16 issues to get all the way to the end of the story, but it's pretty cool. And he set up a lot of stuff for Black Panther that was continued in like other comics. So like Shuri has her own comic that continues off of it. So it's pretty cool.
Cool. All right. Well, Greg, I think you should go ahead and let people know what we think of people who are backing us on Patreon.
Oh my God. People who back us on Patreon, when they die in glorious battle, they get to go to Valhalla. And they get to drink the finest mead, and just it's amazing. It's a constant revelry because they're so amazing and they deserve it. They're just the best people. If it wasn't for our Patreon backers, we would not be able to do this, and we really, really appreciate it.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's go ahead and end there, and we'll continue the discussion in our next episode. So thanks a lot for listening, guys.
Thank you.